For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Punt Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. I'm your host, as always, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. Now, I am super excited to get into something I recently came across. It's a new advanced stat. It's called FATs, or FATs for short, and it stands for field goal attempts per turnover rate. And so it looks like it's trying to measure just how often these high-volume shooters turn the ball over and how efficiently they're getting up shots. And I saw a ton of good players towards the top, and it made me really interested to start diving into the stat. And this is the point where I tell you that I made this stat up completely. Yes, I'm sorry, I lied to y'all. I made that up completely. But that stat sounded kind of legit, right? It sounded like something you could come across on Twitter or the internet and think it could be very useful. And that gets into our topic today of how to understand stats properly, how to dig a little bit and know where they come from, and how to apply them for fantasy purposes. I think advanced stats can sometimes be a bit of a, trigger word, but can sometimes cause some interesting reactions when they're seen or when they're just presented. Especially as we come to the end of the season, you'll see lots of graphs showing, oh, hey, this player has this defensive impact. This player guarded the best player. This player, three-point attempt rate plus difficulty of shots. There's all these graphs, all these stats that you'll come across ranking and trying to show you something and trying to convince you and argue for a certain side. So with any stats out there, whether it's something simple like rebounds, something more advanced, it's crucial to remember that they're essentially a measurement, a count, or a rate, something along those lines. Stats can mean a lot of different things, but essentially, that's what they are. So one of the most paramount things is to know what these stats mean. Take a little bit of time to research and inform yourself to learn about them and what some of their flaws are. Something like points, that's relatively straightforward. The ball went in the hoop and a player scored this many points for that shot. Something more advanced could take a little more time to learn about, especially with the advent of all-in-one stats. And I'm sure you come across a good amount of them. There is Raptor with the old 538 site, estimated plus-minus on dunks and threes, BPM or box plus-minus on Basketball Reference. There used to be a regulated adjusted plus minus. There's DPM from Darko. There's a lot of these all-in-one stats that exist out there. And these all do have some measure of usefulness. I do appreciate these stats. At the same time, and maybe you're aware of this, but these are calculated in a lot of different ways, actually, and derived from a different focal point. And we're going to start getting some advanced math, so I'm sorry if some of these words get lost on you. I'm not necessarily. I start losing my head myself getting into advanced math subjects, so I'm going to try to relay this as best as I know how. But some of these stats basically use box score numbers, so such as points, rebounds, assists, and maybe rate stats like steal percentage, rebound percentage, turnover percentage, and then they come up with a single number. So that's how box plus minus works on Basketball Reference's site. Essentially, for each position a player plays, they assign a specific weight to each stat. So I'm just throwing this out there. Points for a point guard may be weighted at like 0.3, assists 0.7, boards 0.3, and so forth and so forth. You basically multiply that weight times a stat, and then you get a single number out there. So, for players like Luka Doncic, who really racks up a lot of counting stats, he shows up very well in box plus minus. He just is showing up really well. Someone like, who maybe doesn't necessarily rack up stats, but we know is a good player, maybe like Al Horford, he doesn't show up as positively in box plus minus. He's not necessarily a huge counting stats player. Other of these all-in-one metrics use something called ridge regression with some plus minus on the court to estimate a player's impact. And that's what regulated adjusted plus minus does. And so someone like Al Horford, we know by eye test, we know he impacts the game positively. He'll show up a bit more positively there based on all these derivations, all these iterations, basically coming to the conclusion that when Al Horford is on the court, a team's plus minus is better. Each of these has its flaws. Each of them aren't perfect and display different things. And that is perfectly okay, but it's important to know where they come from. So going back to Luka Doncic, he sometimes doesn't show up as well in these more lineup-based plus-minus stats, and that's a whole nother topic itself, why Luka Doncic doesn't show up as positively there. But we know he's a positive player, right? And especially for fantasy, we do probably care a little bit more about that box score stats because that's what translates more to fantasy. But it's also important to know who actually is a good player because those players normally see more game time. Alex Caruso is a great impact of that. He's shown in smaller samples early on in his career that he was such an impactful defensive player on the court. And yes, his body can't necessarily hold up in a large amount of minutes, although it's been proved not the case this year. He's playing a great amount of minutes, doing a great job for Chicago there. But the idea that if he were to play more, then you would just see a great defensive impact has borne out true. And I say all this too, not to say a stat is, just because it's a stat, it doesn't make it inherently accurate or real or good or truth. And that doesn't mean stats are bad. They are not. They are a useful, almost shorthand metric to convey a certain point. But that's what we have to keep in mind with them, is that they're almost a just shorthand or a abridged version to convey this certain point. So I try to understand where they're derived from, to understand if they're leading me down a conclusion that isn't necessarily the one that I'm looking for, and that's probably a bad way to phrase it, but understanding where these stats come from can help you know where their flaws are, identify them, and know if there's a little bit of inherent bias in that stat. Almost all stats have some flaws, but there's usually some value to come out of them. You just have to know how to interpret them, how to read them, and how to work with them properly. Okay, I know that was a lot of database info and a lot of more theory, so let's get into some examples here where I relay this to fantasy and how we can use stats to help us analyze the right point. So let's look at assist percentage. So I'm going to take two players here, Cam Thomas and Grayson Allen. In similar minutes per game, Cam Thomas has an assist percentage of 15.9%, which is about in the top 90 of the NBA, which, okay, that doesn't sound too bad. Grayson Allen has an assist percentage of 12.4. There's a little bit of a drop-off from Cam Thomas. That's about 110 to 115 range. So he's a 20, 25 spots lower in the NBA in terms of assist percentage. However, they both average 3 assists per game. And you would think, okay, they play similar minutes. You would just take your assist percentage, time your minutes, and get an assist. Right? Isn't that how that works? It's actually not. If you look at the formula for assist percentage on Basketball Reference, it says it's an estimate of the percentage of teammate field goals a player assisted while he was on the floor. And the key word there is teammates' field goals. In the actual equation, a player's personal shot attempts are actually subtracted out of the equation. So if a player takes more field goals themselves, hello Cam Thomas, that actually increases their assist percentage, which seems a little counterintuitive, right? You would think assist percentage measures how often a player just assists, but if they actually take more shots themselves, they would hike up their assist percentage. Again, I'm not saying assist percentage is not valuable, but knowing that that's how it's calculated can help layer some context onto it. I do think Cam Thomas has been a bit of a better passer this year. His assists have rose, and his assist percentage has risen as well. but so has his field goal attempts too. So it's a little bit of a buffering effect there. And I'm not necessarily even saying that Grayson Allen is as good of a passer as Cam Thomas, although I do think he is a little underrated in that department. But this is a way, if you just were to look at assist percentage and make the case Cam Thomas is really upping his passing game, well, yes, but also maybe not to the extent you think. So that's one way that knowing that how these stats are calculated, how these advanced stats spit out their number, can help you make a better conclusion and just be more informed about where they're coming from and what they mean.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, we'll get into some players on the upswing. And first, we're going to talk about Jalen Brunson, guard for the New York Knicks, who has been leading them in their playoff charge in the past couple weeks after some just bad injuries for them. He has emphatically shown that his breakout last season was not a fluke, and that he is just a legit all-star player. I usually use all-star as a shorthand for top 30-35 players, and he is firmly in that, if not higher for sure. He has also made major strides in his three ball. His three ball efficiency hasn't necessarily increased, but the volume has, and he's hitting 2.7 this year from 2.8 on the previous year. And you might actually look across his stats on the board, and they kind of have stayed similar, just some increase in counting stats a little bit, especially in this recent stretch. So why else would Brunson be a riser for me? It's the fact that he's doing it consistently. Doing what he's doing again for a second year shows that this is a real baseline level for me. We now have pretty much a two-year sample of Jalen Brunson being this type of player and being able to be this offensive hub for a top team in the Eastern Conference. And I don't want to understate how important that is. Knowing that he is firmly in all-star discussions, probably for the next couple years, on the fringes of All-NBA, I would be shocked if he doesn't make All-NBA this year. That's fantastic. And that's not even me referencing, again, that I think he has improved this year. I think he's slightly improved his passing. He has massively improved his three ball and become a more versatile shooter. He has become just really hub, take it on this usage, take it on the focal point of the offense, being on the scouting report night in and night out. There are so many times that we see players who, once they are highlighted by the other team, struggle. Mikal Bridges really being a prime example of that this year. So the fact Jalen Brunson's doing it is awesome. He's well within his prime as well. So again, proving he's at this level gives him now additional years of surplus value, or just value at this current production, which cannot be understated. We can probably pencil in this production for the next 3 to 4 years, barring any significant injury, and points, high assists at good efficiency. You know I'm all about those stats in Dynasty, or some of the rarest combination of stats. Give me all the Jalen Brunson shares you have. I am really liking what I'm seeing. He looks to be enjoying. This Knicks squad is rallying around him, really. And he is just a main consistent part of not only the Knicks, but should be of your Fantasy Dynasty squad. You can trust him as that hub and as that focal point. Next, let's get into a player that's a little deeper in Dynasty rankings, and that's Peyton Pritchard. Peyton Pritchard, guard of the Boston Celtics. And his minutes are up this year, and you can argue that is certainly aided by the Celtics managing players throughout the year. At the same time, that should not shadow the fact that Peyton himself has improved. He has greatly improved his two-point percentage in all areas of the court, with an overall field goal percentage of 45% on the season. That's actually really solid, especially for a small guard. Compared to someone like Fred VanVleet, who we've seen be sometimes a drain on our field goal percentage, that's partly due to small stature and not being able to necessarily finish as well over these larger players. Well, Peyton Pritchard, he's shooting 45% of the year. Again, that's a really good rate. That may not be something that you point to as, oh yeah, Pritchard's helping my field goal percentage, but he's not really draining it as well. His assist percentage is up, his turnover percentage is down. Two things that you love to see. And yes, I did use assist percentage earlier as an example of something that maybe you take with a grain of salt, as with all stats. But yeah, his field goal percentage is up, but he's also just passing it more too. And his rate of assist to field goals is increasing. So going back to the idea that Celtics have been managing their players lately, well, perhaps the Celtics feel like they can rest players more because they have someone like Pritchard to help pick up the slack in that instance. Maybe that's a little bit of chicken and egg. Maybe that's just the Celtics are that good. And maybe I'm overemphasizing that a little bit. It's not like Pritchard is replacing Brunson's, or not Brunson. It's not like Pritchard is replacing Jaylen Brown's production, for instance. But he is certainly a part of a dang good Boston Celtics team. I think something else that needs to be discussed, and this might be a little elephant, not elephant in the room, but a little understated, I think, at this point in time, is how the new CBA works. And we all saw Peyton Pritchard get a nice contract extension, not extension, well, yeah, extension in the offseason, this past offseason, 4 years, roughly $32 million per year. And that seemed a little rich and a little early to commit to at that time, especially for a Boston team that is projecting to be in the second apron and projected to pay a massive tax. So why would a team like the Boston Celtics commit that sort of contract to Peyton Pritchard so early? Yes, it's partly probably because they believed in his ability. But since the Celtics will be a second apron team next year, they cannot take in any salary. They cannot take in more salary than they send out. Plus, they cannot take in a player making more salary than one they send out. So they can't aggregate salaries anymore. So, for instance, if, oh, I'm trying to think of a player that comes to mind. Let's say a player is making 12 million, right? And they want to send out Peyton Pritchard plus who makes 8 million and another player making 5 million. Oh, that's 13 million sending out. You would think they could take in the $12 million a year player. But they cannot, since that $12 million player is making more than any of those individual players the Celtics are sending out. So let's say the Celtics wanted to improve. They have Peyton's $8 million salary, probably the most movable salary on their books. They can say, and then maybe attach picks, attach assets, whatever, to get a player back that makes less than that. But because that's only possible because they gave Peyton Pritchard that salary. So I'm getting a little of the weeds on the CBA here, but I think it is important to note. I think we've seen the Celtics do this either in case they want to make a move or if Pritchard is just good. And Pritchard's, I think, just been a good backup for them. So I'm not necessarily predicting a Peyton Pritchard trade. I could see it happening for the reasons I just stated, but I could also see him keeping him. We also saw a team like the Denver Nuggets do that contract with Zeke Nagy. And I suspect that's for similar reasons as the one I just discussed with Peyton Pritchard. So that what that would mean for Peyton Pritchard is that either the Celtics believe in him to keep giving him the same role, or they try to make additional further upgrades by moving him, and maybe he gets in a more consistent role on a night-to-night basis, improving his night-in and night-out consistency, which would yield, I think, a little bit of increase for his dynasty value as well. Now, Peyton Pritchard does have his flaws. He's not great defensively, and he never will be. He's just too small for that. And he doesn't necessarily have the reaction timing or speed or tenacity of a Fred VanVleet. But he does try hard on defense, and he does execute the scheme well enough to not be a complete sieve in that part. So I don't know if there's starting upside in Peyton Pritchard. There's probably not. But maybe a capable fill-in starter, maybe a night here, a night there, as we've seen, or a consistent 20, maybe even pushing 25 minutes per game in a combo guard role, that could potentially be in the cards. I think Peyton Pritchard could be a little sneaky depth option to add to your team in the offseason here. Next, let's go into some players on the downswing. And we'll start with Darius Garland, guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And it's just been a weird season for him. He's had some abnormal injuries with the broken face, really just halting his season as he was looking to get going a little bit. And he has looked a little more tentative of late, which I don't blame a player. If I got hit in the face and had a broken face, I'd probably hold back a little bit too and look a little tentative of driving and getting inside. And looking at some of his metrics, they don't look pretty. And really, over the last two seasons, his assist rate is down. His turnover percentage is up. His usage is down. Everything that we don't really want to see. And again, caveating some of these stats a little bit, usage is down, taking a little less attempts. Yeah, his assist rate's probably going to go down. But the fact that his turnover rate, rather, is increasing as well, and his turnovers are not going down, it's not really a great sign. Is this a usage issue? Is this just a lack of rhythm with all the injuries and inconsistency of the Cleveland lineups? Is, as I just alluded to, is this a lineup configuration issue? It's really hard for me to tell when watching, and I'm not honestly sure. Good reminder, this isn't just NBA 2K where a player comes back healthy and you can just use them in your lineup as you want. There's could be some other factors in play here that we're not aware of, and I don't want to harp too much on that because I don't want to make a conclusion based on something that I don't know, but it certainly looks like something's up with him and his play. And of course, it's coincided with the arrival of Donovan Mitchell. You could argue there's been two straight years of underperformance relative to projected expectations for Garland after his breakout year. Now, Mitchell could be on his way out in the offseason. If the Cavs and him don't come to an extension, yeah, there could be a trade there, and the Cavs just want to recoup what they can. But that really seems to be the best hope for Garland right now, is the Cavs making a decision and moving on. And I don't want to say Garland can't get back, but if your hope for Garland to bounce back is more on, I hope a player gets moved, rather than, oh, I think Garland is showing positive indicators, it's not as strong as a vote of approval or a stamp of approval. It's not necessarily a vote of confidence in the player, which I'd rather have a vote of confidence in the player. That's usually a bit stronger than, oh, I hope minutes open up for him. Woohoo. That's not as firm. Maybe Garland just needs to be one of those players that it's clear that he's a guy for the lead ball handler, and it's clear that this is his team that he's running. And I know I just said I didn't have the biggest stamp of approval for him. I still want to believe in the player, and I still do believe in the talent. You can see some of the handle, how great it is in tight spaces, how he navigates the pick and rolls, and how he spots the right pass a majority of the time and manipulates the pick and roll. I love that aspect of his game. So I think there is a buy window if you trust the Cavs are switching things up. But I think it's a little more faith in the Cavs switching things up than a faith in the player. So Garland is a little bit on the downswing for me after these 2 years of inconsistent play and honestly just not the stats we're looking for. The next player we'll discuss is Wendell Carter Jr. of the Orlando Magic. Now, he is a decent player. Don't get me wrong. He gets good minutes for a reason. He is part of a great Orlando Magic defensive team. He takes enough threes to be respected. He has enough size, mobility, length to really do a lot of things in that defense, whether it be switching, whether it be guarding on the perimeter, sinking back into the paint. He's a versatile player, for sure. And that is really good for him as an NBA player. But we're not necessarily talking about the NBA here. We're talking about fantasy as it relates to the NBA. And his defensive metrics just don't stack up to this imagery of him that I think we've had of him for a while. He has low blocks, low steal numbers, low block rate and steal rates. And I know his minutes have decreased this year, so obviously his blocks and steals are going to be lower. But he's never wowed in that category. He's never really... I was a huge fan of him a couple seasons ago. And when he was traded to the Magic, I thought, okay, we can see him become this maybe not defensive hub, but defensive center point, rack up some of these blocks, become this efficient, some blocks, some steals player. And we just haven't seen that. We have to face the evidence in front of us here. He's just not that player. Again, he has good mobility, he's adequate at defending the rim, but he just doesn't create defensive events. And that's what we want for fantasy. We want someone who's going to create that havoc, create disruption. Circling back to some of his other stats, he is a decent rebounder. He has decent field goal percentage. But that's really his only positive, impactful fantasy stats. And even his field goal percentage is a little iffy due to his lower volume of shots. I mean, his field goal percentage is solid. It's above 50%. He shoots a decent amount, but it's not someone like a Zion where he's taking these massive attempts at the rim and inside and really shooting up that field goal percentage. It's a nice little add. Again, that's nice. It's not super impactful though. For me, he's kind of become Wendell Carter Jr. That is, he's kind of become a poster child for a player who has good minutes, has a good role, but one that doesn't necessarily translate for fantasy. I'm not really expecting any major strides in his game at this point in his career either. He's getting to an age, he's seen enough time on the court where, I mean, maybe we see the threes going at a little better rate. Maybe we see him get a little bit more boards. But I'm not seeing anything really, any great breakouts. So, with all this that we just talked about him, that's a good depth option to have on your squad. But what's the actual impact? And this gets into a little bit of concept of depth players on our fantasy squads versus clear, impactful category players. And so depth players do have a role on our fantasy teams to help us fill out the roster. They do. Sometimes you need a center who just will play minutes, you know will play every night, and can give some stats. Those players do have a place on our team and are useful. But if you're also building out a squad, I don't think anyone is saying Wendell Carter Jr., that's someone I'm looking to build around. I need what he gives. Because as we just discussed, what is he actually giving you? He's giving you some boards and field goal percentage, and that's really his stats and minutes. That is valuable. How valuable is that? I think players who are decently well-rounded like that have a place, but they're more not necessarily a focal point, and they're more squad fillers. I think he's a good squad filler. Don't get me wrong. I do like the player, just not necessarily from a fantasy perspective. He's someone that I point to as not necessarily as someone who impacts my fantasy team winning games, but more as ticks boxes and makes me feel cozier inside when I set my lineups. He's not someone that I am bragging about to my friends that I'm blasting on the internet. Wendell Carter Jr. went off because he just doesn't have those games. And so for me, I think it's pretty clear that's the player he is, and that's useful, but that only goes so far, and we need to adjust accordingly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lastly, we'll get into some teams to watch. And last week, I spoke on the Thunder and the Pelicans, and I think we've seen some really interesting things from both these teams in the past couple weeks. First, we'll get into the Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander basically has been out the past week, and Jalen Williams, for that matter, too, except last Sunday versus the Knicks. I said this last week, I'll reiterate it again. I'm not too concerned with Shai missing out. The Thunder, thankfully, are prioritizing his health over seeding, which I think is the correct call. And I think we see a lot of players in the NBA go through this. We still have some iron men like Jayson Tatum, who plays every game, looks fine. But there are also countless other players who miss a week here or there just to make sure that they are healthy. And I think that's perfectly fine. I'm not super concerned with Shai. Let's touch on Jalen Williams then. in his game against the Knicks, because he had an absolute monster performance that I think really displays and indicates the player that he could be. And I spoke about him a month ago. I'm going to speak glowing about him again here. He looked fantastic. He was getting to his mid-range smoothly, calmly, pulling up, hitting jumpers efficiently. I believe he was 14 of 18 from the field on honestly tough attempts, not a lot of rim attempts, and a good amount of mid-rangers. That is insane performance. He didn't look deterred by any defenders. He was getting up so smoothly and quickly in his shot motion that they couldn't really contest him. And just really put on a full all-around performance. And I'm just impressed by him. He only had one turnover as well. That is awesome. He's come on so strong for the Thunder in the second half and really cements my belief in Jalen Williams being the second on-ball star for the Thunder. And I think we have to take notice of that. Let's talk on Josh Giddey, someone who I've spoken on negatively in the past. He has been more efficient of late. He has been, and I have to pay attention to that. At the same time, I don't love his shooting reluctance. Yes, he is actually taking a decent amount of threes per game, about 4.5, and hitting them at a decent rate. At the same time, these shots a lot of times are wide open. He has time to kind of think about it, and it looks like he's not really just gunning them off or taking them in stride. He takes a second to kind of think about it, and it's like, well, I guess I'll take it if they're giving me this much space, which isn't exactly the most encouraging. It's still most of the time a slow and hesitant shot and still a little bit of an awkward shooting motion. Josh Giddey is telling us that he does not think he's a shooter. So why should we believe him as a shooter? He is literally showing with his play that he does not believe in himself as a shooter. We have to listen to that. Again, I know his percentages are up, but these are mostly open of threes. Now, I don't want to go full negative here. I do want to praise his passing. I even remember scouting him pre-draft, and I watched his first game live against the Rockets a couple of seasons ago, and I was impressed from the get-go. I loved how he already, at that young age, was manipulating defenses with subtle head fakes, subtle nods, little pass fakes here and there, and that aspect of his game looks elite and looks elite to this day. The way that he uses a lot of subtleties in his game, I think, is so advanced. And knowing how to just lead players open or even create little passing windows for them is really impressive. And I do think his passing is an elite skill. But the other aspects of his game on ball aren't stacking up at this point in time. Getting to the rim is a struggle. He doesn't really beat his players, create his own advantage. He needs that created for himself. And do I think he could see minutes as a second unit operator? Yeah, I think he could, but I'm still not sure if he can be a first unit operator, and a first unit operator versus a second unit offensive operator see pretty different minutes and different usages. I still believe his passing. I still believe he'll rack up assists. I am just not sure what that volume will be due to minutes in the future and going forward. Maybe he could excel in an off-ball role, but his shot needs to get better, needs to continue improving, and he needs to improve his defense as well. Let's touch on Cason Wallace some. He's already earning positive minutes. He is playing positive in his minutes to see good minutes. And as a rookie, that is really good. I know the Thunder have a really well-built team, but I think Cason Wallace is doing his job and his role really well. He's already a capable defender, taking on tough assignments, sticking with them well. And he's also displayed strong off-ball shooting as well. He is really showing that his run of captain shoot jumpers in college isn't exactly a fluke, and he's hitting those shots really well. It looks like a smooth shot, and he's a willing shooter, in contrast to Josh Giddey, who we just spoke about. So, positive on Cason Wallace, good defender, positive minutes, strong off-ball shooting. Awesome. I love that. And what I'm not seeing, though, is some on-ball reps. And that's just maybe not his role. The Thunder are a team winning. They don't want to gift or too many entitlement possessions to players who aren't necessarily aiding winning. When Cason Wallace does get the chance to run the offense and run a pick and roll, it doesn't look good. It looks pretty poor, and those drives just go into bodies, go nowhere, don't really lead to much, normally just lead to a kickout and a reset of the offense. But he already has a solid baseline with that defense, with that shooting to build off of. And I didn't love his on-ball reps in college. I thought he didn't look that great, honestly. And I didn't really see a on-ball player in there. But those things can develop at the NBA level. They can. And I'm not ruling it out. So given that he already has a good baseline to work off, if we do see any improvement in that on-ball game, that's going to be a fun player. So Cason Wallace, I'm keeping my eye out for that, for any improved on-ball reps. Let's get a little deeper here, and I want to talk about Aaron Wiggins. He's also getting some more minutes in this run, and I just like his game. I think he kind of, I don't want to say he's as good as Wendell Carter Jr., because he's obviously not. But he's someone who I think does a lot of everything well enough, and I think he could see some more time, whether in OKC or elsewhere. I think he's been a nice player in his minutes and just ticks a lot of boxes. And I really do like players who can tick a lot of boxes from a depth purpose that I feel confident that will get good minutes. And Aaron Wiggins is someone who I'm seeing that out of, knows his role, plays to his role well, gives good energy, some good shooting, good cutting, and good defensive length and size for his position. So I think he's a little bit of a someone who may not cost too much to trade for or acquire, but you could see some nice returns from him. So I would keep an eye on Aaron Wiggins here. I also like Jalen Williams as a deeper cut. Kind of similar to Aaron Wiggins, I think Jalen Williams, and I guess I should clarify, this is Jalen Williams, J-A-Y-L-I-N, the big man Jalen Williams. I think he just does a lot of things well on the court. Good defensive positioning. Doesn't necessarily have the size, but he does a lot with his size. And he does a lot of things well, and I think he knows how to play the game well. I just like how he moves off the ball, how he can pass the ball well, has some ball skills. But I think what will be key for him is improving his shot well enough to provide some semblance of a stretch big viability, and that way you can really build a bench lineup off of that. His minutes have been pretty inconsistent this year, but I think he's someone that we should watch as well for any skill improvements or any potential roster moves. So keep an eye on Jalen Williams. Lastly, let's get into the Pelicans here. Another fascinating team. Brandon Ingram has been missing the past few weeks, so it's allowed a lot of different lineups and a lot of different players to stand out here. Let's talk about CJ McCollum first. He has stepped up as a secondary primary option because they've needed someone to handle those on-ball reps without Ingram on the court. It's been a little bit of a mixed bag for me, but he's doing enough that I actually feel confident that he does have some more in the tank than I originally thought at the beginning of the year. Now, his usage has obviously increased with Ingram out, and his efficiency has gone down a little bit, but whether he does see this increased usage or he sees increased efficiency once Ingram is on the court, I think he has enough years of a solid floor that we can just see him fade away into the sunset gracefully and not have some falling off the cliff value. So I think he'll just, obviously he's going to get older. He's going to probably perform a little worse, but I don't think that tail off may be as dramatic as I originally thought. I think it'll be more gradual. So if you do roster McCollum, I think you can be safe for the next year or 2 years, maybe even three. What we've also seen in this past week has been Zion Williamson as the primary option. He got a little stymied by the Magic and Paolo Banchero last Wednesday. And note, I actually was very impressed with Paolo Banchero's defense in that game. But Zion Williamson has looked quicker this past month. It hasn't fully translated to the box score. We're not necessarily seeing more assists or greater assists or better field goal percentage, but he just looks more dynamic. I've really been impressed by him. And I don't want to use the words played himself into shape because I kind of hate that concept, but he looks slimmer and he looks better, and he is getting me all excited for what he could bring to the court again. But Zion Williamson has struggled in some games at the rim, and I think that's really in huge part to the Jonas Valanciunas fit, and I hate how he kind of has Jonas Valanciunas the team's offense and defense. I want to be clear, I think Jonas Valanciunas does give some good rebounding, can fight well in the interior, and make some finish well around the rim, but as I just said, I think he Jonas Valanciunas is your offense and defense. And what I mean by that, on the offensive side, he's not a shooter. He's not. He's cramping up the floor. He allows his defender to sag off and really just crowd the paint against Zion. And some of these games, when Zion would drive, when Jonas Valanciunas was on the court, there'd be five guys right on the edges of the paint. That's crazy hard for any player to score through. And I'm not going to put that all on Zion there for not hitting that shot. That's just a tough ask. And that's really a large part and due to Jonas Valanciunas being existing on the court. Additionally, the ball kind of stops with him in the post. And he's not really, that's not an effective play. That's not an efficient play that you want to be running. You don't want to be running too many Jonas Valanciunas post-ups in a game. So I'm really hoping the Pels, sorry, going back on defense, he is not, does not possess good lateral mobility, doesn't protect the rim well, and I think the whole team has to compensate for him. I'm not going to call Zion a good defender as well, but I think Jonas does a lot more to harm that defense than Zion. So I'm really hoping the Pels find a different option and a better fit next season, as Jonas Valanciunas' contract is expiring, and I find it pretty unlikely that they would bring him back, at least in a starting job rotation. Let's touch on Trey Murphy III, who has picked up after a rough first half of the season. I don't like that I'm not seeing as much driving and attacking closeouts in this game, especially as it's not helping his field goal percentage. But he is just absolutely bombing threes from deep all across the court, and even sometimes as far out from the logo. And so I love that we're seeing that from him. And I love everything else that we're seeing from a fantasy perspective. I love his defensive activity, although I think he can get beat in isolation at times. I think he does well with his flank to disrupt passing lanes, get some deflections, get some steals. And I just love how he can space the court, which is needed for Zion, and that he's just showing the ability just to get off those threes and make them. So I am loving him. He's been, I believe, in the top 70 this past month or 2 months, and I think we should take notice of that and really keep him in mind going into next year, especially if the Pelicans make a change at center. We also have to talk about the other forward, Herb Jones, who this whole season has continued to improve his shot and is attacking closeouts some more. Compare Herb Jones to Josh Giddey, who are both, I think, came into the league as inadequate shooters. Herb Jones is willing to take the shot. The motion looks quick enough. And he's also attacking well off the dribble when defenders close out on him harder. And I like seeing that. Even though it comes with some mixed results when he drives, the fact that he's doing it is better. And he's more than just this open spot up that you want to sack off of. I'm not saying he's some deadly shooter that you need to have a guy in his pocket. But he's doing just enough there to really get me excited for his two-way viability. And obviously, we know what he gives on defense. He's an offensive monster. As I say in New Orleans, not on Herb. Lastly, I want to touch on Dyson Daniels, who just came back in the lineup recently, coming off that injury. And he's just showing the ability to get his hands involved on plays. He has great length, knows where to be positionally for the most part. Still some misrotations here and there, but he's using his length well, baiting players in the passes that they shouldn't make and that he can get his hands on. And so I love just his ability to get involved in the action. Those are players who are create defensive events and that we really want to key on for fantasy. I don't like the lack of an on-ball game, and he's not really being asked to do that. But I'm also just not sure if that's something in his bag. I don't think we've seen too much of that. Kind of reminds me of Josh Giddey a little bit there. But we have seen him rack up the assists and transition, and when he gets moving off ball and then finds the next pass. So any offensive improvement there means he'll probably see the court a good amount due to what he can bring. and we know that he can pile up stats well in a limited capacity. So that's why I continue to rate Dyson Daniels pretty highly, because I think we've seen, even in his 15-20 minutes per game, his propensity for racking up stats, so just any more minutes, is going to be great for his fantasy and dynasty value. That will do it today for this episode of the Pun Intended podcast. And as we get into the playoffs, we'll start shifting a little bit to prospect scouting and start getting into some prospect profiles. So I am excited. I've been doing some scouting over the past month here, really starting to flesh out my own scouting document. So I'm excited to just relay my thoughts on players to y'all. We'll obviously touch on players in the postseason and teams and how they're performing a little bit as well. But as we start moving to draft season, we're going to really start honing in on those prospects. So I'm excited to start diving into that with y'all. With that said, see you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.